series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, right with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the church of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information about PAX Inc., make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, how you yourself can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved. And at the top of the website, through all the tabs that I'm naming, there's a Learning Center tab, which is a very important tab. You have your Learning Center tab. There's a drop-down box with a bunch of resources. Resources in the form of audio, in the form of political information, books, survival information, legal cases, and videos for your edutainment purposes. And there's also a store tab that you can click on that you can further support the organization. Make sure you visit the website once again at www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, my co-host Patrick Irvin, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma September, all of our podcast hosts here on the Freedom Train Network, and all of the wonderful podcasts and this information and initiatives that we have going on for the Freedom Train Network. So make sure y'all check us out. Pat, what's going on, my brother?
So I got a question, Joe.
Go ahead.
What do you look for in an individual before you start stalking them?
How fast they are. That's important. Is that answer suffice for you?
How fast they are?
Or if they wear camouflage, they can hide.
I don't know if speed will matter. If you're stalking, they shouldn't know that you're there. If they're running for you, you messed up somewhere.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I never stalked anybody, so that's just the first thing coming to my mind.
Here we go. That ain't what you said 10 minutes ago.
Man, you a spin dog. You like the male Gail King, my man. You know, you a spin dog.
You stop it. Who we got? you didn't kill it.
All right. So, but before we do it real quick, I want you to tell them about Black Women Celebration Month real quick.
I did that last week.
Man, do it again this week.
Look, for all you sucker fish out there that don't know what we got going on, all you jive turkey goldfish in the bottom of the shoe, algae eating plankton face people, listen, we are celebrating Black women for this month of May, and we've been doing it every month of May for the last 3 months of May, including this month.
Three months of May.
So we are taking this time to celebrate Black women and all of the amazingness that they do, all of the wonderfulnesses of their existences. And it is
Black women specific.
And if you're not a Black woman and you feel some type of way, I mean, go kill yourself. That's the only answer I got for you. If you're reincarnated as a Black woman. But that's what we doing because we are brothers that think that Black women need more support, they need more praise, they need more recognition. And so, since we have a wonderful network here and a wonderful platform to do that, that's what we're going to do. And if you don't like that, you can follow my earlier stated advice. Did I do it good?
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, you look rough around the edges, but it's all good. So every day of this month of May, we're celebrating a different Black woman. And in addition to that, we're using our interviews to interview a couple of Black women who are out here doing amazing things within our community. That's what we're here doing today. So this young lady has over 20 plus years in homeschooling with an African-centered curriculum. She's an award-winning homeschooler. She's an award-winning, I guess you could say, magazine editor, magazine writer. I first came knowledgeable of her, I would say about 3 or 4 years ago. It's through mutual friends that we have. I'm a young lady who has a homeschool initiative here in Tallahassee. Pat more so than I, really understand and really champion the idea of African center schools as well as African center homeschools. And we thought it would be very fitting to have this young lady come on the podcast today and really give us some good foundational information for those of us who think about homeschooling or those who think about building their own homeschool for their black children. So we want everybody to get up and put your hands together for the award-winning Queen Taiz. Put your hands together. Let's make this thing happen. Yes. Welcome, Queen. Welcome once again. Thank you for being right here on the Freedom Train podcast series with us.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here, especially for Black Women's Month, African women throughout the diaspora being celebrated. And I just appreciate the invite.
No problem. Like I said, I feel like this is one of our more important, more necessary interviews because of the fact that you're dealing with the education of our children. And that, to me, is one of the pillars that we need to truly build our community up, like we're always talking about. And you're one of the people who are not just talking about doing the work, you're actually doing the real work. So definitely want to have you on here, but definitely want to give you your flowers as well while you're here on this side of the earth for all of the amazing things that you've done for our community for so long.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It's no problem. So, Pat, you know, you got the first question, man. It's on you. Let's do this thing.
So the first question is you know, Joe do a lot of talking, so people tune him out sometimes. No disrespect, Joe. Can you tell the members of our audience who have gotten in the habit of skipping forward the first 5 minutes of the show?
Whatever.
No disrespect, Joe. You know I listen to it. Who you are and what got you so interested in homeschooling and why African-centered education is important? I understand that's 3 questions rolled into one, but, you know. The floor is yours.
Okay. Well, to tell you a little bit more about myself, I'm a mother of 7, which is one thing that I take pride in the most, which really I feel had a huge influence on my outreach and my dedication and training also in terms of educating other children that will and desire. I am a master teacher. I run a homeschool here in Atlanta of 60 students. I'm the director of Roots to Fruits Homeschooling Cultural Collective. I am an international speaker, best-selling author, and I also am a curriculum architect. So I build curriculums for African-centered schools as well as individual programs from homeschooling to co-ops to just personalized, customized curriculums for families. I also am the founder of the Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Expo, which I love, one of my favorite gatherings each year, which happens normally here in Atlanta, Georgia, every third weekend in July. And my way of getting involved in homeschooling was really just being committed first and foremost to my own children and realizing that, you know, I wanted something that was different for them in terms of them being able to reach their greatest potential and living their true divine purpose. And, you know, after working with children for so long, you know, I really, I knew the value of my children knowing their own culture and being in an environment where they were loved. And so initially I had sought a African-centered private school, which my oldest son actually went to for 1 year. And my daughter was right on the heels of him. And so when both of them were embarking on that same age range, I realized that the tuition was just way too expensive. I was living in New York City at the time, and the tuition was about almost $700 a month, $650, and wow. for each child. And I thought, wow, that's a lot.
Wow.
And yet, I had vowed that my children would never touch the public school. So the dilemma kind of, you know, it seeps in at that moment. It's like, what other alternatives are there? So I began to just voraciously look online and trying to find resources. I'm thinking maybe I can find some scholarships or, you know, all types of things. I'm looking them up, and I'm not finding anything. But I do come across this thing called homeschooling. And in my mind, you know, I've heard of homeschooling lightweight, right? Not haven't heard too much about it, but all the aspects that I've heard about it were just people in music, you know, traveling or actors, you know, things like that. I never realized it was something that anyone could do. And so I began to look up resources for Black people in particular, and I found nothing. I looked up things for anything of Indigenous people. I found nothing. And so all I found was white women Christian groups that that served, you know, their own purposes, and it really didn't have anything to do with us or our mission. So so there was really no resources that I knew about the first 2 years that I embarked on homeschooling. But I was clear once I saw that I could do it and that I was going to try. I was going to, you know, put that effort in, and I was going to make it happen regardless of whatever I had to go through to make it successful until I could find another option, which actually once I got started, I realized there wasn't another option because they were thriving so well and they were doing just amazing things. And then the time we had to spend together to share together was priceless. There were so many other benefits. So that's kind of how I got started initially. You didn't ask me another question about African-centered education. Did you ask me something about that as well?
Yes, I did, but you answered it. You answered it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
It's important, and you, but you smashed that Hulk smash. Yeah.
So that was your complete beginning in being an educator as a whole, or was that just your beginning of homeschooling education?
No, I've actually worked in education since I was 16, believe it or not. When I went to high school, I was in an early childhood development program or track in high school. When I went to college, I realized, once I got to college, I realized what I was being taught had nothing to do with our African children. And it really was discouraging for me initially. And I began to gravitate more towards our elders and those who were paving the way for African-centered education. And it just drew me in such a way that I really became just mesmerized by the power of us integrating our culture, integrating, you know, our worldview and all of these aspects into educating our own children. And so I just began to study at the feet of our elders, you know, Dr. Ben and Amos Wilson and, you know, just a whole long list that that really assisted in cultivating myself. Queen Afua, just a whole, you know, I could go here, have a long list of people. But
right.
That inspired me so much that I realized the importance. I always was an educator who had very high expectations, in the beginning there wasn't necessarily an African-centered standpoint, but more a Black cultural aware mm-hmm. standpoint, which is a difference.
Okay.
So the Black cultural aware, you know a little bit about your history. It really starts pretty much with what's going on in this country, civil rights or slavery and that type of thing.
Right.
And you recognize the things that we've come through and that we've, triumphed over. However, African-centered education really focuses more on our African worldview. It's more of a holistic, mentally, physically, and spiritually, you know, developing our children from all angles. And it really connects us to our people around the world through our value system, through how we look at the world, through the foods we eat. You know, it dives into so many different aspects of cultivating our children, from economics, you know, all of those different elements. So it's a different level of
awareness of self-identity that goes back thousands of years versus going back hundreds of years.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because I use myself as an example for what you just explained. Every mm-hmm. school that I've attended has either been predominantly black or half black, half white. Like my middle school was half black, half white. But it was it was segregated, so most black people stayed on their side, most white people stayed on their side. So like middle school was the only time in my life where I had more than one white teacher. So I was one of the few black people who came up in the educational system where I was taught by black people, but it was more of a black awareness thing. And it wasn't a grand awareness, but it's just a mm-hmm. peek into this racism and white supremacy and things that's going on. But I got to FAMU and enrolled into the psychology program, which is African centered. So you said, that holistic learning, that's when I got.
You were there with Dr. Kobe, learning. Dr. Kobe Cambone.
The first class
there?
I took.
Was he there?
Yes, ma'am. That was the black psychology class was the first class I took. I still have his books. I took him for two different classes. He was, matter of fact, he was one of my father's mentors that I found out once I got
to college. Wow. Powerhouse.
Right.
Powerhouse.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely with you on the importance of African centered, which would take it further than just being aware or having that surface knowledge of what's going on.
Right. Definitely.
Okay. Go ahead.
You was next up.
Well, because African centered education, to me is something that we're missing. My brother, I think around first grade, well, either before first grade or around first grade, he went to an African centered school. And we could see the difference in how he viewed education, his education track from mine, because by the time I came along, school was gone. But from you, what are some of the main advantages that you can tell from teaching African-centered curriculum to black children in a homeschool setting, as opposed, what's the advantage of teaching that curriculum as a whole, but teaching that curriculum in the homeschool setting, in your opinion, as opposed to maybe a charter school or public school setting?
Well, public school, charter school, you know, it cannot be fully African-centered because, you know, when you're homeschooling, there's no restrictions or limitations. So you really can dive into any and everything that is ultimately empowering for us, and sometimes things can be a little too hot for a charter school environment because you still have the public school guidelines that you have to adhere to. With the homeschooling piece, I feel that, you know, our children are able to go a little bit deeper. And also with homeschooling, the world is our classroom, so we're not limited by the building. You can learn, you know, traveling. You can learn on field trips a lot more often. You don't have to wait once every 3 months to take a field trip if you take one at all. You know, you can incorporate that into your daily living. I find that one of the things I did with my children that was extremely beneficial was the two that I'm thinking of that started their own businesses very young, they both had internships. And so we incorporated the internship as part of their curriculum. And my daughter was able to become a raw vegan chef, award-winning chef, world-renowned, actually, at the age of 12. And she still has her business in her center to today. And my son was able to become a power 16, you know, by just simply internship and, you know, getting gearing their educational track towards their divine purpose and not just towards whatever they say the next hottest career is going to be, right? So really looking at who they are, what they love, what they're into, The same thing with my other daughter. She's into dance, you know, started her own dance company at 15. And, you know, we were able to really customize. I'll say, you know, you can customize in the homeschool environment a little bit better than in any public school or charter school environment, because you don't have as many children. And if you do have a homeschool or homeschool group and you do have quite a bit of children, you have a lot more parental involvement as a result of it being a homeschool, you know, than the public school or the charter school.
Okay, so the full on the main components, like you're saying, is you being able to shape it the way you want to shape it, that you feel the best help the children that you're dealing with, and less restrictions by the state or all these other overruling bodies or whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's critical, because we don't want to be in a position where we have to compromise in any way or water things down for our children. They need to really be able to understand the fullness, and because the fullness is really is going to give the fullest impact. And anytime we have to water things down to any degree, it lessens the impact on our mind, on our body, on our spirit, and that reflects in how we act, how we think. So, yes.
Okay.
That right there is deep, because I work with a number of kids in a homeschool group co-op working on critical thinking. And the right in from public school or from some other, like, you can tell the kids that have had so much of their information watered down, are so much of it just directly spoon fed to them, that they don't even really know how to process when they get in an environment where they're required to think. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to just hand you this information. You gotta consume it, dig a little bit, figure it out, you know. But that is something that, because we talk about it all the time, you see it out in the world, even on a communal level, when the way we react to certain things and the way we respond to certain things, it shows there's like a generation, it seems, of people right now at the helm that are just had information spoon-fed to them their entire lives. And it's not even like you can really blame the public school system, because that's kind of, you know, like, it's hard to do anything else with everything else today, all of the guidelines, all of the restrictions, all of the students, all of the everything else. So I just wanted to really, like, that what you just said to me was very, very, very potent and powerful. For those of you listening,
yes, and bring that back and listen. You know, with that being said, the discipline levels and, you know, the ability, like you said, to think, discipline of the mind, you know, being more proactive and self-motivated. You know, when you're a critical thinker, you're a whole lot more self-motivated with what you do in your life. You're not waiting for someone else to give you the stimulus and then you respond, which is that regurgitation effect.
Right.
I ask you the question, you memorize the answer, and anything outside of that, it just makes no sense to you, right? So we have to develop our leadership in our children. Developing leadership, we have to have critical thinking within that. And so that is pivotal to have that, extremely critical, because if we're going to influence the minds of our young people, they have to be able to see the problem that exists and recognize that it's a problem. A lot of times, if we don't bring these subject matters up that affect our community and why things are the way they are, then how are they going to solve? How are they going to come up with solutions to fix the problems of our community? So that's another thing with African-centered education, is that, you know, we focus on healing our community and not focus on necessarily assimilating into other communities.
Yeah.
But we have to first heal our own community. And then should we need to go amongst other communities for whatever reasons at whatever moments in time, and we can do that with confidence in knowing who we are and not compromising who we are. And so our children have to also have that stance and that standpoint and that backbone to be able to function in this space.
Okay. See, that just made me think about two different questions, but I'm not just going to be throwing questions at you like that. But Whatever's
on your mind. Whatever's on your mind.
But I do have this question. I don't have any children yet, but when I do, I want to homeschool. And I'm sure there might be other people with children or who may be trying to plan ahead like myself. So
yes,
how does,
mm-hmm.
let's say I want to create my own homeschool or my homeschool co-op or things like, how does one create a homeschool or start homeschooling? How does that process start?
First, just by speaking it into existence, you know, that this is what you want to see. We have to realize that things start in the spiritual realm before it comes into the physical realm. So speak it into existence, you know, ask for assistance from, you know, whatever divine spirit you connect with, your ancestors, because this is something that's going to assist our children and our families. So you have a lot of people in your, a lot of spirits and people and energy and all that in your entourage, mm-hmm. right? So just ask the question, say, I would mm-hmm. love for this to happen. I need help in making this happen. And begin to do your research. If you have like-minded people around you, that always makes it 10 times easier. Even if it's one other person, you know, a like-minded family, begin to, in advance, seek out other people who have, you know, similar lifestyles that you want to live when your child is here, you know, what you want to provide and those types of things. And then as well as, I always say, focus on envisioning what type of child rearing that you want to participate in. What type of father do you want to be? What type of morals, values, traditions that you want to pass on to your child? Because everything begins with the detoxification of our own indoctrination. And if we don't begin that as parents, that's happening at the same time that we're educating our children, and they're also teaching us. And we also have to look at the things that we gained throughout this systematic education that we've come through and this way of life of living just in this construct. What are the things that we need to change and get rid of, which is something we need to do anyway, right? We need to just be mm-hmm. growing and evolving in our lives every day anyway. But when we talk about bringing children forward, we want to make sure that we are really intensely involved in that growth process, because whatever is not right with us, we will pass it on to our children. And so the whole point is to, you know, think about that process beforehand. A lot of times when you have the opportunity to do that, I think that's like gold. You know, sometimes people, their children come forward, sometimes even here a couple of years before they even start thinking about it. And sometimes, you know, the child has already been conceived and then they begin to think about it. So it's something that you and your complement would just have that dialogue and conversation about. What does it look like? Because the hardest thing is to be on two different pages, bringing a child into this world. And, you know, you have this vision of, you know, liberation and homeschooling. And then she's like, I'm not doing nothing like that, right? So being on one accord and one vibration and one frequency means a lot. Even if everything is not exactly in sync, you know, you have that like rhythm where you can grow and evolve together and make sure that you're passing on those type of spiritual nutrients to the child.
Okay. And the other thing that I was thinking about that came out of your previous statement, you're talking about being able to cultivate the mind of the child. You know, like, make sure that you will build an African center foundation before you send them out into the world. So, let's say I have a child who aspires to be like a professional athlete or something like that. And mm-hmm. I know from the general idea, the general look and thing and thoughts that we have about athletes is that they're just athletes. But we know we can mm-hmm. peek between the surface, we can find some who are not. So how would you build the mind of that particular person? So this person that has this great athletic ability, and we want to be able, before we send them to these schools, whether it's a HBCU or PWI, we want to make sure we cultivate their mind. So how would that look for like that athlete to have their mind cultivated and be able to use their athletic abilities to empower themselves and their people to actually be an asset to the community?
Absolutely. It would look exactly the same. They would be cultivated exactly the same. The only difference would be that for some, you have different types of scenarios, right? You have some children who are raised African-centered who basically create their world and live within it, right? And then you have those who also navigate within other worlds. So the thing is, when you have your self-identity, then you are right wherever you at. When you know where you are and who you are, then you'll know what you will and won't do. And then at the same time, it's a different mindset. So now instead of, you know, having an athlete who's spending money on women and 20 mansions and all this, you got an African-centered brother or sister within that world who was spending money on African-centered schools and building up the empire, right, for our people. And you have a lot of people from back in the day, a lot of famous actors and actresses who caught a lot of flack on the front end because the people say, they were straddling the fence. But a lot of those people under the table gave money to the Black Panthers and to Malcolm X. And, you know, they were donating under the table. So they donated thousands and thousands of dollars to a lot of our movements, but they could not say that publicly because then that would jeopardize their positioning and whatever role they were in. So it's kind of like I look at it like the spook who sat by the door. You know, do what you love. Know who you are. Do not be compromising of your spirit and what you know to be correct. However, with that being said, you know, if you have the affluence from that perspective, know, you know, where your causes lie and how you're going to support those causes. Because there's multiple layers to that. Number one, by being that, you look at like Muhammad Ali, right? You know, his story is inspirational on so many levels because he had a non-compromising standpoint, yet he still was the best of the best. So once you know who you are and you have your self-identity, then people have to respect you because, number one, they want that money. That's why they're hiring you. They want that money. Right. So at the end of the day, you know, make them compromise. You don't compromise who you are.
I got you. That does make sense, though, that spook that's set behind the door mentality. Because I do think before we send our kids out, they should understand a specific mission to go get resources and bring them back.
Exactly.
I told you, Pat.
Yeah, you did. What did you tell me?
I don't know. I just wanted to tell you that I told you.
Oh. So, So why is it important, because I know a lot of people are listening, and I've had this question asked to me, and I'm really curious, because you've said a lot of very, very interesting and powerful things here. So I'm interested, why would you, if somebody were to come up to you and say, well, I'm a white person, and I teach at a Black homeschool co-op. Why is it that Black people need to be taught? Why is it that Black children need to be taught by Black children? Why can't me as a white person teach? And I'm not, well, everybody listening should know I'm not white, but for new listeners, I'm not white, okay? why can't I, you know, why is it important for a Black child to have a Black instructor? I don't think that should matter. Like, what would you say to that individual?
Well, for me, it is important because we have to be able to see ourselves in our educators. We have to be able to see a reflection of our family, of our story. I don't say history. I say it's our story of our story coming into being forward. A lot of our learning is through socialization. It's not just what we're taught. And I'm sure a lot of people can think of teachers that they had that they may not have all the way took to the lessons or the information that was being given, but it was that one brother or sister, you just liked the way they flowed. They showed you love, and, you know, there was something about that interrelation that had an impact on how you view either men, African men or Black women. And so I think that's important that we keep that relevant and that there has to be a real strong love and understanding of our culture and the things that we go through in this lifetime for a white woman to relate to that is just not possible. It's not possible. It doesn't mean she can't empathize, but she can't relate. And so part of educating our children, we have to make sure that we can connect with them first before we begin to educate them. We have to connect with them. And we connect on a mental, physical, and spiritual basis. You know, that's like the five love languages, you know, where you're able to tap into the different ways that we receive the love from each other. And part of it is, part of that deals with culture. It really does.
Right. So, well, when you are teaching these children, especially teaching them from this African-centered standpoint, do you draw from your experience sometimes as a student? Like, did you come from an African-centered educational background, or did you have the traditional background? And are there specific aspects from your childhood or your upbringing that you integrate into this to make sure that the kids experience something that you may have experienced or do not experience something that you experienced in this public school world, if that's where you come from?
I mean, absolutely. I think it's important for us to share our challenges and triumphs. It's just like when we have our, you know, we have our legends, and it's good to know their story because a lot of times we see the end result, mm-hmm. right? And people need to know what we went through or what they went through to get to that point, because otherwise it gives a false idea of what success is. It's like one day I just plopped right here in this spot, and it didn't happen like that.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a lot of things that we go through day in, day out, and the perseverance we have to have, the relentless attitude, you know, the non-compromising mental space we have to have, and then the other things, people, relationships that might not work out, you know, how are you choosing your friendships, your sisterhoods, your brotherhoods, you know, just different choices. It comes down to just the choices. So me personally, I was raised in a public school environment all the way up. Now my first half maybe through middle school, I was in a regular public school, mixed public school, where it had a lot of black children and some white, maybe two-thirds black, one-third white. And then when I went to high school, my parents sent me to they call it a METCO program, but it's where they send you to where, they bus you out to where they think the better schools are. So it was a horrible experience for me because I wasn't able to be with, you know, my friends that I grew up with. At the same time, a lot of the handful of black people that went to the school weren't really interested in being black. They were interested in assimilating.
Right.
So there was me and one other person, a brother friend of mine, Reggie, at the time, that we were not interested in assimilating. So we weren't the huckabuck type. We weren't going to laugh at things that weren't funny. You know what I mean? We just weren't there for that. And so, honestly, I didn't really learn much when I got to that space. If I look back, I don't really remember too many of my classes. I didn't do well. It just was very spiritually traumatizing for me because it was such a cultural injection of who I was. You know, it really wreaked havoc on my soul. So what that did for me, though, that I see now, the positive aspects of that, I know their culture. I know how they function. Whereas some children, you know, who don't get to experience that, sometimes, too, if you have, like, you know, schools that are black and white, you have a lot of white people that act black, right? They assimilate because there's so many black students in the school. So they like, oh, they're the cool white boy, the cool white girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little different. It's the same thing, but it looks different, and it feels different in the atmosphere. When you go to a place where when it's just them, you can see how they function for real. And so all of the things that, you know, that they show on TV and make everything look so squeaky clean and, you know, no, like it's totally not like that. So, you know, it just gave me a realistic perspective of the disparity between, you know, Yorugu culture and European, some say European. That comes from a book by Marimba Ani, if you're not familiar. It talks about Cadogan, about the traditions of, you know, how Europeans got here. So anyway, that's a whole other story. But So the disparity between their culture and our culture, it is extremely, extremely different, and we can see that at the desecration of whole societies through colonization and massacres and destruction that continues even forward now into COVID-19, right? So the cultures are completely different, and if we're not clear, we need to be just as clear about what it means to be African as we're as clear as what it means not to be African. Because it's easy to kind of, you know, blur the line, and that's where we get a lot of the cross-pollination of cultures and the hybrid cultures, you know, the people who wear the clothes but they still act, you know, European, but you couldn't tell them anything different, right? So it's like it just gets really confusing for our children to see, because, you know, they're also mimicking. They're not just doing what they're told to do. They're also doing what they're seeing. And so, you know, it is really imperative that we make that distinction. I know I'm going on. You asked me about the school, but I just taking it all easy.
No, you're okay. You're okay.
Let me stop there. Like,
no, you're okay. Because, I mean, you're speaking truth. One of the main reasons I asked that question is because until I got to FAMU, in the, not just a student at FAMU, but a part of the psychology program, I hated school from third grade to the second half of my collegiate career. I hated school. I was a student who was just there. Third grade was the first time I had a white teacher, and she kind of spoiled my educational appetite. And I don't think any of my other teachers recognized that. And so there was no repairing of that until I got to this African Center space. And that's when the repairing happened. And I'm guessing, you know, being in this psychology space as well. So that's why I asked, because for me, for what I do, I'm an educator as well. And when I do get a chance to teach and be in front of people, I try to make sure I give my all, especially to black kids, try to give my all.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I don't want somebody to leave my space saying, oh, man, you didn't really help me think different about education or a different way to use education. And I just think that's so important, though, for our children.
Absolutely. I mean, and just your mere love and presence and wanting to be there makes an impact within itself. And there's less and less black teachers in the classroom. So just the fact that you care enough to say, this is where I want to be, I've chosen this space and time to be here with you all, right, that enough is an impression, because for some children, that's more than what they get from their parents at home. Right, just the knowing that they're loved, that they, you know, that you're willing to give them your attention, and that you're willing to nurture them, you know, sometimes that goes way beyond any lesson you can teach on the board, you know.
That's true. That is true. It's true. So, the magazine, you're a writer, you're an editor. For an award-winning pioneering Liberated Minds Black Homeschooling Education magazine. So can you give us more information about the magazine and why you started it and just where people can get the magazine and just a full overview of it?
Absolutely. The magazine has been in existence for, 7 years, I believe it is. I started it for the same reason I started the expo. You know, our people were awakening. I was looking for a conference and a magazine, different resources, you know, to support my decision to homeschool my children in an African-centered way, and I could not find anything. So the magazine kind of supports the expo. The goal was to create a community of African people throughout the diaspora, you know, so it's not just a magazine for this side of the world, but for everywhere, you know, connecting our people. And it also provides resources, which is the same thing as the expo. You know, we usually have over 100 vendors and exhibitors that come with African curriculum materials for us, by us, and things for our family, books, you know, everything that is created by us and for us. So the energy of that alone you know, and then once you get into what the products are, you know, it's just amazing, you know. So having that resource, I felt was really critical. And then also having the training, which is also a huge part of the expo. We have over 40 workshops teaching us how to educate our children from an African-centered standpoint. Because a lot of times when we're detoxifying from our own indoctrination, it's kind of challenging how to teach from a different perspective when we've learned one way of teaching for 12 or more years, right? So we dive into everything from not just math, science, reading, writing, and all the core subjects, but we also natural childbirth. We also deal with health and wellness, you know, eating healthy foods. We deal with economics, you know, at the expo as well as the magazine. So the magazine really is just a reflection of the expo, and I felt it was imperative to make that happen. And we, and, you know, with the work of the community and those contributing articles and just the excitement, it only comes out once a year, even though everybody's trying to push it to at least quarterly, and we're considering it at some point. We just have a lot of different projects going on. We have an app that's getting ready to be re-released. It came out for a minute, and I decided I wanted to have it where people can have connections within the app so they can contact each other within, which is an app for African-centered resources. So you can go on there, you can look up African-centered curriculum materials, you can look up homeschools, you can say, well, hey, you know, I'm in this city, let me put in my zip code and see whatever African-centered homeschools, schools, counselors, enrichment programs, what's the closest ones to me? And it'll pull it all up.
Right.
So I felt like that was needed because one of the biggest questions people would ask me is, do you know of anything in my area? And I get that question.
Right.
A lot of people call me, do you know of anything in my area? And I said, you know what, we need to create a database where people can go and have access at their fingertips and just look up what's in their area. Because it's supporting two things. It's supporting the people in their need that and their wants, but it's also supporting the schools and the programs and the people who have dedicated their life to the empowerment of our children. So, so yeah, and then I also have a book, Why We Homeschool, that just got released, goodness, maybe like 2 months ago. So it made 3-time bestseller on Amazon, and it's a compilation of, thank you. It's just, you know, different people's perspective on why they homeschool, because a lot of people feel like, you know, if you're black and you homeschool, that you homeschool for the same reason, and that's one of the things that was the biggest shocker to me. When I started doing the expo, 9 years ago, is that the biggest shock to me was that people were not just homeschooling for the reason that I was. And I was just like, wow, like, okay, their reason is totally different than mine. And so I just had that assumption in the beginning, which was a very wrong assumption, because there's so many reasons why we as black people homeschool our children. But yet, you know, being able to meet the need and hear the different stories of why people homeschool, so people can kind of connect and relate to some inspiration that references whatever's in their heart and in their spirit. So this is the first year we're going virtual with the expo. So I want to let you know that. So you're welcome to join us. I was a little disappointed at first because, you know, I was just like, oh, we're not going to see each other in person. You really had... It was a little traumatizing for me in the beginning, you know, like, oh, my goodness, all this going on. I can't believe we're going all the way in June, July, and, you know, it's still. Yeah, so we decided to take it virtual, which, you know, it has its pros and cons. It really has been coined the African-centered family reunion, you know, and, you know, people come year after year from all across the country, all across the world. It's all like minds of black parents, educators who really care about their children and want to do something different, even if they don't homeschool, right? So this year we're taking it online. So what's great is a lot of people are able to attend that always wanted to attend that couldn't come to Atlanta. And then we're also doing, for the first time this year, we're doing a few workshops in other languages as well. So I just did a training over in Paris, France with like 2,000 people. And I don't speak French at all. It was translated. But the beautiful thing about it is they're so hungry over there for this type of knowledge and information, and a lot of them do speak French. Some of them speak English and French. There's a good majority mm-hmm. that don't speak English, but a lot of them speak both, and a lot of them are going to take part in the expo, which is great because our power and strength really comes from us connecting around the globe.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And so Pat and I both have information that we want to be able to contribute to, especially Black homeschools. So we're going to
yes,
definitely be
yes.
in contact with you about getting
please,
our information
please,
out.
Please.
Yes, ma'am.
You have my Pat. You have my email, so you can just email me
yes,
with
ma'am.
It. I encourage y'all to take part, like I said, in the conference. That's going to be June 26th through the 28th, so it's going to be 3 days. And you can just go on Liberated Minds Expo, libertedmindsexpo.com, and find out. We're adding presenters. We still have a lot we're putting up little by little. But, you know, even with business itself, you know, we tie the economic piece into the educational piece because we realize that for a lot of people who are on this track of educating our own, we're also on the same track of becoming independent economically and, you know, creating intergenerational wealth and not having to work in establishments that we don't feel comfortable. So we also have the economic piece for building business. We have everything from marketing courses to just a little bit of everything, how to become a public speaker, you know, all kind of stuff, things that are going to help us in business as well as you know, monetization, real estate, investments, things like that. So we have that. Usually that's like our Sunday of the expo, but this year we're integrating it
right.
throughout, being that we have so many people from all over. So definitely.
Okay.
So,
yeah, that's exciting. Pat, you got to get your information
I'm
in.
I'm excited. What you
Hey, I'm down to help out wherever I can help out, whether it's just being a techie and doing tech work or, you know, whatever. You know, I'm just trying to, you know,
yeah.
I want to help people. So.
Yes,
but,
come on board.
Yeah.
Come on board.
So.
If you go to the website, there's tabs on there for volunteers. There's tabs on there for people that may want to be presenters, although I think most of those are taken down for this year, but. We have the presenters, we have the volunteers, we have the sponsors and partnerships, collaborations. We have a lot of assets because the expo is just a piece of Liberated Minds. You know, the Liberated Minds Institute
right.
covers a lot of different things. So that's just one component. So there's things that we're doing year-round. And, you know, our biggest thing is to be connected with the community because it belongs to the community. It's not a personal thing of mine. Like, I'm the founder, but I'm not the one who makes it go. Like, you know. There's a lot of people who put time, effort, and energy into be able to bring these services to the community for, like, really, like, pennies. It's like $25 for 3 days, over 40 workshops. So,
wow.
I mean, where are you going to go? You know, $25, you can spend that at the corner store, literally. Throw $10 and some
exactly.
gas and some chips and a drink, and that's your $25, right? So it's like
right.
we always keep it affordable. Even when it's in person, you know, it's like – $45 a day. You're there all day. You get a free vegan, a free vegetarian soul food dinner, buffet. I mean, all that, you know. So we just make sure that it's love because the whole thing is built on love and empowerment of our people. And we have to make sure that, you know, spirit is in everything that we do. So it's just an opportunity to just connect, you know. So I encourage everyone to come on out, liberatedmindsexpo.com. If you want more information, you need to reach out. Our number is 678-368-8593, 678-368-8593. And then the website for the Institute is libertedmindsinstitute.com, and then my personal website is queentaese.com. That's T-A-E-S-E, Q-U-E-E-N-T-A-E-S-E. And that's more for, you know, anyone who's needing guidance around curriculum or any type of personal development. You know, anything, it's speaking engagements, everything's done like through that website for that.
Right. Okay. That's what's up.
So,
my bad. Go ahead, Pat. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, because I wanted us to get into this question because you've spoken a lot about culture, and I do consider myself a culturist. Culture is huge to me. Like, you know, all joking aside, I feel like you can boil everything down to culture. Like, everything.
Yeah.
There isn't a thing you can point me to and say, well, that don't have nothing to do with culture. because right after I show you that it does, I'm going to slap you and laugh hard. Anyway, so here's what so one of the pillars of your mission is cultural development.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about what cultural development means to you and how you believe that what you're doing is actually developing the culture in the Black community?
Yes. I mean, culture for me, from an African-centered standpoint, you know, culture is a way of just simply a way of life, the way that we live, right? It's a lifestyle. So when I look at culture, I look at us being not just conscious, but conscientious. A lot of times people think culture is consciousness, which is just awareness and having knowledge, but conscientiousness is the actual living out of the knowledge. And so that, to me, the conscientiousness is more important, to me, the most important part of culture. And being able to look at our different traditions over thousands of years that have worked for us, from the holistic health and wellness, the foods that we take into our body, the way we heal our body, the way we keep our body in ma'at, in balance, you know, looking at the principles of ma'at, and then looking at the aspect of how we interact socially, you know, what is the social structure in terms of our elders, in terms of our children coming in, whether it's our naming ceremonies, whether it's rites of passages that we go through at different stages in life, you know, adhering to those traditions that have worked for us for so many years. So in addition, you're looking at language, you know, how we communicate with each other. And that's really important because that was one of the first things that was taken away when we dealt with coming into this construct in colonization around the world, was our language was taken, because that was such a foundation of our culture. And so much of how we thought and what we do was embedded in that language, which was why it was taken away. Also, our spirituality, even if we have different practices and traditions, there's certain things that should be a foundation, like our libations, giving thanks to our ancestors, you know, our gratitude, our affirmations, things that should just be a part of our daily life. If you're into the yoga, I know I'm a committed yoga instructor, so I'm really into the yoga piece where, you know, just helping to keep myself balanced internally and externally. A culture of looking through our worldview. You know, perspectives are important. And like you said, there's culture in everything, right? So, you know, you're on that side of the tree and I'm on this side of the tree. You're seeing it differently than me because you're in a different space and position than I am. So it's just the aspect of our worldview and being able to see what that just simply means is, how does it affect African people? You know, a lot of times you'll hear on the news, oh, this is not a big deal, or that's a great thing, or that's not such a great thing. What perspective is that coming from? Is that a perspective that is detrimental to our people, or that's beneficial to our people? So we want to make sure that we're looking through our eyes, and the question we should ask is it good for our people? You know, that will help us to decide that. And then our economic empowerment is our culture. You know, we've relinquished so much of that by no fault of our own, you know, in the beginning. But just in terms of, you know, ownership, coming back into a space of ownership, whether it was property, real estate, land. I mean, there was no greater owner of real estate than us. I mean, we had the pyramids. We built the pyramids, right? And so the respect of nature and the whole elements, you know, the air, fire, water, earth, the way we were sun worshipers. Yeah, we did worship the sun. We didn't worship it as if it was the end all, that be all, but we did worship it because the plants don't, the food doesn't grow without it. We worship the ocean, meaning we just appreciated what the ocean gave us. We worship the earth and the trees and the rivers because there was a reciprocity of treatment, of love there, recognizing that, okay, if you do for me, I'll do for you. There was no throwing garbage in the ocean and, you know, just a total disrespect and desecration of the land. So that is another component of culture, you know. And then how we model each other in terms of
you know, our children and how they look up to us and how we are responsible parents, responsible educators, responsible leaders, or just family members and community members, the responsibility to our brothers and sisters looking after each other and knowing that I am because we are, you know, Ubuntu and Gubuntu, which is a South African term that means I am because we are, meaning I alone cannot be successful. I can't be happy just with succeeding with my own goals. I have to make sure I'm reaching out to my brothers and sisters to help them accomplish their goals too, because their goals, them accomplishing their goals is beneficial to the whole and to all. So, I mean, there's a lot of aspects I could go on to culture, you know, understanding our story, you know, some people say history, but understanding our story, where we come from, the different contributions, you know, all of the magnificent, I say blacknificent contributions that we've made to the world, you know, not just to the U.S., not just during slavery, but, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, you know, everyone has stolen and mimicked our culture, you know, and that's all you see even now is misappropriation. You see everybody wants our culture. And then so it's sad when you see everyone else jacking our culture, but we don't even want it, you know. That's a problem.
That's
so
big.
Anyway, those are some of the tenets, I feel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that was just, I know I could go all day when it comes to culture, but, you know, those are some of, I think, the important things. And I think, you know, it's really important for us to have high expectations for our children. The expectations that we have for them are not ours. You know,
right.
There is, we are able to go way beyond what they tell us that we can do. Those are their expectations. At two, you start doing this. At three, you should do this. At five, you should do this. Those are their expectations based upon their learning style and their brain capacity. It has nothing to do
right.
with how we function. And we know, we see, even sometimes in the most impoverished communities, even today in Africa, you'll see posts on Facebook, oh, this 5-year-old, this 10-year-old invented, you know, electricity for the whole
right.
city.
Right.
You know, just from a fan and a wire and a screwdriver. And we're like, what?
Right.
You know, and that's not abnormal for our ability level. It just means that child was
exactly.
focused on a need, filling a need, and was allowed to be in a creative space. And see, it doesn't take money to be in a creative space. It just takes a mindset. So that's really what we're dealing with, is cultivating a mindset when we're dealing with culture, a way of life, a liberation lifestyle.
Yes. And I love that you said the consciousness and the conscientiousness, because it's one thing to think about it and talk about it. It's another thing to put things into action. When you put things into action,
yes.
you actually take the steps to make it happen, you will see the creative power come to life. And I love that you place focus on that. I love that you are doing more than just talking. You are backing it up with real action. And you are affecting many, many different people when you're taking people along with the ride with you. And that's one of the main reasons we want to have you on this podcast, so more people can learn about you. And because you're doing wonderful things out here in the community. And once again, I want to take my hat off to you for everything that you've done, everything that you're doing now, and all the future endeavors and all the future awards that you will win, and just all the things that you're doing, because it's making a great impact on our present and our future, which will help all those who are alive now to really recognize our past and respect our past, because, you know, they set the foundation for us, but you're bridging that gap. So definitely shout out to you.
I appreciate it. I thank y'all for having this platform, because, see, everything meets in the middle. Right? So one thing
right.
assists the next, assists the next. So the fact that you are dedicated and committed to doing it, and I did go on and check out all of the wonderful, amazing podcasts that you had, the different shows, and, you know,
yes,
it is, it's all pertinent information and very laser-focused on what it's for our people. And so I just commend y'all for being on here and taking the time, because you could be doing anything. You could be somewhere laid up drinking and smoking, just chilling, playing some music, and that's it, right? And you good.
Right.
But this is a time
right.
that you're taking this power hour to say I'm going to dedicate this to my people, and for this month I'm going to dedicate it to my black women and sisters who are out here, you know, doing for the cause. So once again, you see the complementarity of, you know, the sisters and the brothers. Y'all putting this show together, you're bringing the sisters in. There's complementarity throughout, and that's the culture when we work together. So I appreciate this.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you. Once again, I like to make sure people have it. So before we get to this last question, can you once again tell people your website, your social media handles, how they can get in contact with you?
Absolutely. Social media, you can find me on IG at liberated_minds, M-I-N-D-S, and it's liberated_minds_expo. That's for the Liberated Minds Expo. And you can also find me on IG at Queen Taese, which is Q-U-E-E-N-T-A-E-S-E. And then we also have a Facebook, same thing, Queen Taese. And then Facebook is The Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Expo. And the websites are liberatedmindsexpo.com. That's for the conference that we have every year coming up June 26th through the 28th. And then there's the Liberated Minds Institute, which is a site that's actually being revamped right now, but it does still have some information on there. That's kind of our umbrella for all of the different things that we have going on. And then the QueenTaese.com, which is Q-U-E-E-N-T-A-E-S-E. We also have a site for French speakers. If anyone on the line is from throughout the diaspora and just wants to share with anyone, it's FrenchFrench.QueenTaese.com, and that's in the whole website is in French to connect with some of our brothers and sisters throughout the diaspora in Africa and beyond.
All right. Thank you.
You know what? I'll give my number to our business number. Let me do that. I want to, because sometimes people just want to reach out with a quick question. That's 678-368-8593. And the email is liberatedmindseducation@yahoo.com. I think I covered it all.
We'll make sure y'all read the description and everything for this, because we're gonna make sure we have everything posted. So, down to our last question. This is Pat's question as well, and we're going to set him up. He's special, so we set him up with something like this to make him feel.
You got doggone right on special. Do a So if you were the all-powerful, all-knowing ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
If I was, okay, what would I change, and what would my message to the people be? I would change our mindset. I would change the mindset of our people to know that we can and will be victorious, that we can and will do any and everything that we put our mind to. And what was the second part of it? And what would my message be? Would be, let's do it. Let's get it. Simple as that.
Oh, man.
Simple as that. Because it's our mindset that's holding us back. It really is. That's where the indoctrination
right.
is. If we can get our minds right, we can. It ain't nothing. Ain't nothing but a thing.
Now, that's real. I mean, in the sense of sitting here talking about it all day, let's get it planned out and do it.
There we go.
I like
there
it.
There we go.
I like it. Now, what's unique about that question is we get different answers. We've been asking that question for years, and we get different answers every time. And so that's one of the fun parts about it. So
yes.
Definitely log that, add that to the vault. Yes, ma'am. Once again, like, it was – definitely a pleasure. You are bringing so much to the community, and you're such a valuable piece to this community. And like we said, we want to make sure that we show you some love for all that you've done, sharing our platform with you. And we also want to let you know any messages you want to get out to the masses, any other times you want to have different things you want to promote, have some ideas or whatever that you want to talk about. Freedom Train podcast series, and the Freedom Train Network is a platform that we built for the community to be a bridge between people like yourself and the community. So all you have to do is just reach out to us, and I'm going to make sure we stay in contact, because this, we built this for us. So you're more than welcome back anytime.
I appreciate this. Madasi, Asante Sana. Yes, this is so needed. This is so needed, more than what you know. So once again, I just give my gratitude and appreciation and love to you both.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And we'll definitely talk to you soon.
Indeed. Okay. Have a great night.
You have a great night as well.
Okay. Peace.
All right. Yeah. Queen Taich. Man, hey, she dropped some jewels. That you might well call her Master Musa the way she was dropping jewels on that one now. So I dig it. I dig it. I dig it. You heard me? Go ahead, freestyle, not patent.
Bars on cars on Lars on Mars. Jars on
there you
Mars.
Go. Boom. There you go. There you go. There you go. Hey, y'all, remember, once again, it's the month of May, so our Black Women's Celebration Month. Make sure you visit our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. On the front page, if you scroll down a little bit, you can see our Black Women 2020 celebration. Click on that picture, and you will be able to see all the women that we are celebrating. We have celebrated so far this month. Go support, spread the word. Come be down to be a part of it. Make sure with this interview, this podcast, you download the podcast, download, like, comment, share, download, tell a friend. Download, make sure everybody download each episode and you have it with you, and let's keep this Freedom Train thing going. Let's keep this energy going. Let's keep this Black love going. What's your parting shot, Pat?
All day, every day, get it with the lace front.
Yeah, good lace fronts too. Good lace fronts. mine gonna be free your mind, and the rest will follow. Hallelujah. Hey, man, I am Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin, and this here is the Freedom Train Podcast. We out just like a thief in the night. I sink my teeth in the bite.
Hey.
Yeah.